From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. I've chosen two papers to discuss with you today, one looking at temporal bleeding rates in patients after MI over a 20-year period, and then lastly, a very interesting study looking at the application of the 2019 ESC-EAS dyslipidemia guidelines and how that might influence care of patients having acute MI. So let's get started with this first article published in the European Heart Journal last week, Temporal Trends in Bleeding Events in Patients After MI, and it's from the Sweetheart, a study and registry in Sweden. And they looked at over 370,000 patients enrolled in the registry from 1995 until 2018, and they tracked trends in in-hospital and out-of-hospital bleeding events out to 1 year. The bleeding events in-hospital included fatal bleeding, intracranial hemorrhage, or bleeding requiring blood transfusions. And they did standard regression models to try to look at risk-adjusted bleeding rates over time. And interestingly, they showed from 1995 to 2018, the in-hospital bleeding increased from 0.5% to a peak of 2% in around 2005 and 2006, and then that decreased back to a plateau of around 1.3% up until the current era. Out-of-hospital bleeding increased in a stepwise fashion from 2.5% to 3.5% in the middle of the study and then 4.8% at the end. The increase in both the in-hospital bleeding and the out-of-hospital bleeding was parallel to increasing use both of invasive strategies for MI and also the adjunctive antithrombotic therapy and the dual antiplatelet therapy, of course, and more potent dual antiplatelet agents. The decrease in in-hospital bleeding from 2007 to 2010 was probably a result of implementation of bleeding avoidance strategies. It's very important to know that in-hospital reinfarction decreased from 2.8% to 0.6%, and out-of-hospital MI decreased from 12.6% to 7%. And the composite of out-of-hospital MI, cardiovascular death, and stroke decreased from 18.4% to half of that, or 9.1%. So the authors showed in a beautiful study looking at bleeding trends over 20 years that the introduction of more invasive strategies for acute MI, as well as our agents used to reduce thrombosis, did result in an increased bleeding event rate. But this was more than counterbalanced by substantial reductions in thrombotic events, such that the rate of the composite, you know, cardiovascular death, out-of-hospital MI, stroke, went from 18.4% to 9.1% out at 1 year. The study illustrates, of course, the tension that we have with current therapies to prevent coronary thrombosis. And this study for sure suggests that while bleeding is important, in the current study, it's more than counterbalanced by the improvement in overall outcomes. This doesn't mean that we don't want to continue to search for better and better ways of reducing the risk of bleeding in our patients. The second study is a paper also in the European Heart Journal this week, and it looks at the application of the 2019 ESC-EAS dyslipidemia guidelines to a nationwide study of patients with a recent heart attack, again, taking advantage of Sweden's large nationwide Sweetheart registry. And it looked at over 25,000 patients who'd had an MI and then had a visit at 6 to 10 weeks after MI between 2013 and 2017. And in looking at the patients, most of them, almost 90%, were receiving high-intensity statin. 83% of the patients would have been eligible for LDL expanded therapy, as they had not attained a target LDL below 55 milligrams per deciliter and or a 50% reduction in LDL cholesterol. So in this particular study, the mean age was 62, 25% were women. The mean baseline LDL was 123 mg per deciliter. The simulation model suggested that if you started high-intensity statins followed by add-on therapy with ezetimibe, the LDL target would have been reached in about 20% of patients using high-intensity statin monotherapy and another 29% or so if you added ezetimibe. And this suggests that about 50% of these patients, post-MI victims, would still be eligible for PCSK9 inhibition after a period of several months of treatment. If you use alirocumab or evolocumab for these patients, they estimate that about 90% of patients would reach the LDL target. So this is a really interesting paper. It's a simulation model, but it does show the fact that treating LDL cholesterol after an MI, if you just plan on high-intensity statin, a substantial portion of patients will not reach the aggressive goal of an LDL 50 milligrams per deciliter or less, and that we would need to add ezetimibe. And you might even consider adding that in hospital if the LDL level is extremely high and the patient's already been on a high-intensity statin. This study also illustrates the fact that if we're really serious about reaching our LDL targets based on the guidelines, as many as 50% of our patients suffering an MI would end up being on such an agent in addition to high-intensity statin and ezetimibe. Obviously, that has serious financial implications for patients and for countries, and I think it does illustrate one of the challenges we have when we have new therapies available, yet sometimes the resources constrained around them make adoption challenging. So we've covered two papers. One of them looked at bleeding in patients who've had an MI, and this last paper looks at the 2019 dyslipidemia guidelines and how you might apply those to a large population, such as those in the Sweetheart study in Sweden. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. I recorded this on February 26th. This is your weekly update from acc.org. You can find these articles, the journal scans, and their links on the website. Also, check out the educational catalog feature on acc.org under Education and Meetings. This can be your sorting tool for all the educational offerings that we provide. Hope you have a great week, and thank you for listening.